What if you had to make the most important decision in your life today? In fact, you already have, at least for your life so far. We make decisions every day, but some of them can shape the course of the rest of our life. Intersections explores those decisions and their consequences. You choose to turn this way instead of that way. Why? And what happened next?
Welcome to Intersections.
I am interviewing Ornella Gashumba, who grew up in Rwanda. Is that right, Ornella?
Yes, sir, it is.
And you just graduated from college at...
Oklahoma Christian University.
Oklahoma Christian University.
Yes.
Congratulations
on that. Thank you.
We met at 1 Million Cups here in Oklahoma City, which is a great gathering of entrepreneurs. And Ornella, I want to ask you about your background a little bit, because you have a very interesting background. You have come a long ways to get to Oklahoma City, graduating from college. Can you just tell us a little bit about growing up in Rwanda? You actually have quite a tragedy in your past, don't you?
Yeah. So as you said, I'm from Rwanda. It's a country in East Africa. They call it the land of 1,000 hills. It's beautiful there. You should, you know, visit sometime. So about 20 years ago, 22 years ago actually, there was a tragedy. There was a genocide. About 1 million people were killed in horrible massacres, and my father happened to be one of those people. He was 27 at the time when I was born, and my mom was 22. And, you know, they were freshly married, very much in love, and he didn't survive the massacres. And I was there with my mom and our family trying to, you know, rebuild a future after such tragedies. So that's the setting I grew up in. I grew up in a country that was struggling to leave its bad history behind and trying to build a future. I was fortunate enough to have a family that loved me and cherished me and, you know, supported me. Although I didn't have a biological father growing up, I felt like I was very much supported. My grandfather was very much involved in my education, and he pushed me really hard so I can, you know, be educated and open doors, as I can say. So.
Yes. So you had a large family that kind of, you know, literally and figuratively wrapped their arms around you.
Yes.
And made sure that you were able to recover and move on. Of course, to the extent that anyone can say that you recover from that, you don't ever quite recover from something like that.
It's one of those things that just mark your life and shape it one way or another.
Right.
You know, you might choose to be a victim of, you know, the things that happen to you, like your genocide, and it's you are a victim, but you might choose to act on that. Or to just learn from that and go forward.
Yes. How old were you when your father was killed in that genocide?
I was 4 months old.
4 months.
Yes.
So you really have no memory of your father at all, except for family members.
Yeah, I have no memories of my own with him, but from hearing my mom talk about him and my family members talk about him, you know, they talk about him in such a great manner that I feel like I know him. You know, you know, they talk about how funny he was, how loving and caring and intelligent he was as a person, that I feel like, you know, I know him and I see a lot of him in myself as well.
Yes. For most of our listeners, probably the extent of what they know about the Rwandan genocide was from the movie Hotel Rwanda.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that's probably the extent of people's knowledge about that.
Yeah, and that is really not an accurate picture of what Rwanda is about.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. I wanted to know if you thought that
was an accurate portrait. Every time that I meet a person and I tell them that I'm from Rwanda, they're like, oh, I know that from the movie. And, you know, I just have a lot of things coming up in my mind that I, you know, could tell them.
Okay.
But I don't say those things. But it's a picture of what was going on in the country 20 years ago, and right. the journey that the country has made over those 20 years is one of those, you know, most splendid journeys that you can imagine.
Was it accurate? The movie was meant to be a period piece, you know, a fairly recent period, but the movie was focused in on just that time period when the genocides were underway. And so what you have to tell people is that's not Rwanda today, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not. It's nothing to do with Rwanda today.
Right.
Rwanda today is budding with creativity and entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and hope and growth. So it's really not an accurate picture of the country as it is today.
From the little that I know about the recovery of that country from that horrible time,
mm-hmm.
tell me about reconciliation efforts that went on in Rwanda after that has made what you think is a strong country today.
So of course the people who were in Rwanda at the time, you know, in the genocide,
right.
you know,
yeah.
you had neighbors killing neighbors, friends killing friends,
uh-huh.
sometimes family members killing family members. And it was just not one person killing another. It was just the society just falling apart.
Right, yeah.
And the community
Complete
being completely
collapse
crushed.
Of society.
Yes.
Yeah.
But over the years, the great leadership that we have in our country today has managed not only to put that back together and, you know, to piece the pieces back together and used this amazing traditional system that we have called Gachacha to help people, you know, talk through, you know, whatever happened and seek justice for the victims. Mm-hmm. And it has worked out pretty well, I think.
Well, obviously so. So you think this is a great time in Rwanda right now, then, right?
Yeah, it's a great time in Rwanda for me as a person to grow up
right.
and for you as
yeah.
a tourist to go visit
uh-huh.
or you as an investor to
Not
go invest.
Not a dangerous place anymore.
It's actually the safest country in, I would even say, in the world, because
right.
We not only, you know, keep our own safety, but even help other countries,
right.
you know, ensure their safety. So
yes.
it's very
yes.
safe.
Matter of fact, aren't Rwandan military forces a part of the peacekeeping forces in other parts of Africa?
Yes, they are. Yes, they
yeah.
are.
Uh-huh. I think that says something right there, that Rwanda 20 years ago was in complete collapse, and now it's such a stable country that your own military helps with peacekeeping forces somewhere
mm-hmm.
else
mm-hmm.
in other parts of Africa now. So, yeah. What are some... things that you remember your family talking about how to recover from those horrible times? You know, most people would hear that and think that would threaten to consume you, that these people just randomly killed your father because, you know, of whatever. It was just kind of this big spasm, wasn't it? Might have started out with tribal tensions, but then it just turned into a big spasm of violence, wasn't it?
The main message that I received from my family growing up was that it was important to be loving always, always, despite the circumstances and, you know, whatever you might feel like injustice that might have, you know, fallen upon you,
yeah.
that it was important to stay loving and, you know,
to turn that loose somehow.
To do what?
To turn that loose, to turn loose of
yes,
that.
Yes, because the only thing that can, you know, win against hatred and violence is love.
Yeah.
So they really made sure that I understood that growing up.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It sounds like your family is a family of faith. Is that right?
Well, there are some Christians in my family. But growing up, my mom had was open with religion and...
right.
whatever choices that I would choose to make
yeah.
with my religious life. So.
Right, right. So you weren't pushed into anything at
no.
all. So it was just kind of a foundation of your family saying we have to embrace love.
Mm-hmm.
We have to move on. Was that pretty characteristic of the whole country, that the country just was shocked by its own collapse afterward? As you were growing up,
see, as I was growing up, I don't think I can speak for the whole country growing up, because growing up I had issues of children. You know, I was more focused on coloring my picture book than I was with whatever was going
you
on in the country.
You weren't aware of those things, really.
No,
Did your family kind of try to shield you from that, son?
I would say that they answered my questions whenever I had any.
Yes.
But they answered my questions if I have any.
Right.
So
people really paid attention to the movie. I have always consumed a lot of news, so I was very aware while that was going on of all of the news reports coming out of Africa at that time. Most people here believe that conflict started as a deep tension between the Tutsi and the Hutu tribes. Is that accurate, do you think?
Say that again.
Well, there are most Americans believe that there are two basic tribes in Rwanda, right?
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous to call
them
tribes.
And I'm not pronouncing the tribe names right. That's probably why you don't recognize
them. Oh, no, but they're not even tribes, because it was more like social classes, if I can say.
Yes.
And, you know, it was just, and they were based off of what a person does for a living.
Yes.
If you grow crops, then you would be one thing.
Yeah.
If you have cattle, then you would be one other thing.
Right.
So I wouldn't qualify them as tribes.
Yeah, so the focus on the tribal differences was really something more that the news media just kind of needed in order to try and explain it somehow. But really it was a lot more complex than that, wasn't it?
As I said, I was only 4 months old when the genocide happened.
So your family really has not said any more than what you ask about, right? I mean, they just haven't told you the story about how all that came about. It's just living forward from it, right?
They considered those things to not be a good basis to judge people.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
So rather than, you know, judging a person based on what their, you know, identity card says,
right.
They would maybe get to know the person and, you know, judge them from there.
Yeah.
So growing up, I never was taught to just, you know, think, oh, that person is such thing or the other is such thing.
Uh-huh.
So growing up, I had no idea what those things were. You know.
And your family did you a great favor by that, didn't they?
Yes.
To only... That's a very key thing to any family surviving any kind of trauma is to only deal with as much of the trauma as you need to right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good lesson for anyone there, that, you know, when your family's been through trauma, your family was focused on raising you and making sure you came along just fine and that the rest of the family did well from that point forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're focused on the future. You grew up in a family that was very focused on the future, it sounds like.
They were.
Yeah.
You know, they were hopeful and, you know, trying to rebuild themselves.
Yeah.
And
was that pretty much true of Rwanda as a country, as you begin to get older, as you moved up closer into your teen years where you're a little more aware of things? Did Rwanda feel like, by that point, did Rwanda feel like a very hopeful place?
Yes. It had this same feeling that I have when I go through Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
You know, it's vibrating with potential, with a sense of possibility.
Yes.
And it was a good environment to grow up in, because it was encouraging and empowering, just feeling that, you know, you have all the place and all the space to do what you want, to make some good change.
Right, right. So you feel that same way about Oklahoma City? You feel that same spirit in Oklahoma City? Is that what's attractive to you about being here right now?
Yeah, I really enjoy the sense of, you know, growth and possibility and all the tech startups, you know, starting here and everything that's, you know, growing really fast. It feels like a good place to be in if you're interested, you know, in growth.
Yeah.
So
you told me that you're interested in import-export business and making some connections with Rwanda. Tell me about Rwanda's economy today.
Well, I don't think the couple of minutes that we have here would be like enough to talk about Rwanda's economy today, because it is just like, it's explosive and it's growing so fast. It's actually one of the fastest growing economies in the world. As we speak, you know, with a more than 8% growth in GDP per year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
How does that happen? What is the main reason for all of that growth in Rwanda?
I would say
that... Are you
that
a coastal country? Do you have a coast?
No, we are enclaved. We are just, you know, in the heart of Africa.
Ah, yeah. So you don't have any coastline.
No, they're not.
To drive that growth.
Yeah, but Rwanda has found this strength in investing in its people, which is what it did with me. Rather than maybe focusing on the fact that it is not a coastal country, that it doesn't have any access to the ocean, it has chosen instead to invest in the people, which is, you know, our biggest wealth as a country.
Yes.
And so they invested in me as well as many other students, you know, by making sure that we get an education that is to world standards, so we can make change in a lasting manner.
So by the time you graduated and you were ready to go on to college, you were already fluent in how many languages?
I do speak Kinyarwanda, my native language, and French and English.
Wow. So you actually receive instruction on the grammar of your native language you heard spoken at home?
Yes.
Then, so you knew the grammar?
Yes.
A lot of people grow up and they hear a language so they know it, but they might not know the grammar. So, but you were taught in your schools not only English and French, which was, those are the two main languages of business in Africa, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that was just a part of your regular education in Rwanda.
It was, and I feel like it has.
So you weren't some sort of special child.
No. No, I wasn't.
So Rwanda really focused on education then.
Yes.
The whole time you were growing up.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
It's amazing.
What was the best thing about being educated in Rwanda as you were growing up, do you think?
I'll speak from my perspective, and being a girl usually is not easy, I think, in Rwanda or anywhere else.
Yeah, right.
But I felt like I was supported not only by my family growing up, but also by, you know, the educators, you know, encouraging me to work harder and giving me some, you know, sort of prizes a little bit, you know, encourage me, you know, to keep up the good work.
Right.
And especially girls were encouraged, you know, I remember receiving prizes, you know, as, you know, being, you know, a best performing girl in my, say, my class or, and all that, I think, has encouraged me not to just like pass my classes, but to do very well in my classes.
Now you got to go to what was the college again you went to?
Oklahoma Christian.
Yes, okay. So you got to go to Oklahoma Christian College because why? You told me this the other day.
Yeah, I was blessed to be a beneficiary of this scholarship. It's called the Rwandan Presidential Scholarship that is awarded to students who score highly on this national test.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to be one of those. And thanks to that, I have received an education, and
So you got your degree in what?
See, I get a lot of questions about my degrees. So I have a double degree in finance and mathematics, and that's kind of a odd combination. But there's a story behind, I promise. So when I was in high school, my focus was on physics, chemistry, and math, sciences.
Okay.
And so my professors were encouraging me to pursue engineering as a major once in college. So, you know, they were like, you know, try something like civil engineering. Or I was like, all right, you know, and I didn't know enough about majors or anything to be able to say, yes, I'll do that or no, I won't do that. So whenever I was filling out my papers to go to college, they asked me what major I wanted to do. And I had no idea. So I have this uncle who, he was an engineer, and you know, I have so much respect for him, and I look up to him, and he was doing telecommunications engineering, and I thought, guess I'll do that. And I was like, maybe together we'll start a company about telecom someday in Rwanda. And so I wrote down telecommunications engineering. But then at my school, they didn't have such a major. They were like, would you try electrical engineering?
Okay.
And I was like, maybe, maybe not. But I ended up picking mechanical engineering as a major for the first year of my semester.
Okay.
But when I got there, when I got to school, everybody was speaking about this thing called passion. You know, they were passionate about, you know, their major. They were passionate about right. this music, passionate about, you know. Their talk was all about passion. And to be honest, I didn't know what passion was. Right. And so they're like, you know, I'm passionate about engineering. And I was like, well, I'm going to be in this class with, you know, 100 other students who are passionate about, you know, what they're doing. And I barely know what passion is. I'm like, maybe I should double check myself. So the first semester went by and, you know, I came, you know, to realize a couple of things
right.
that I was not passionate about engineering.
Which is a common experience in college.
Mm-hmm,
college
mm-hmm.
is a place where we really kind of get to explore mm-hmm. things and find out what we really are passionate
mm-hmm,
about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So rather than continuing to do engineering, because I didn't feel comfortable sitting in the lab for long hours, and I didn't feel like the things that I was learning in class,
right.
which are amazing and work out amazingly, you know, for some
uh-huh.
people,
yeah.
But weren't working out for me. So I thought, you know, what can I do that I am passionate about? Because passion seemed to be like a great topic in the freshman class. And so, you know, I went to my advisor and, you know, told her that I wasn't sure about the engineering thing anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know, I needed to find something else.
Right.
But my scholarship was a scientific scholarship.
Uh-huh.
So I had to do something that is science related.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know, I don't like chemistry as much because it involves being in labs. I'm not sure that I like biology. And physics, nah.
Right, yeah.
So I thought, hey, why don't I go for math? You know, I like math.
Right.
So I went for math and went uh-huh. for a minor in finance.
Okay, okay.
You know, I thought about, you know, I was like, what can I do that, you know, is interesting to me?
Right.
So, you know, I talked to a couple of people, and Oklahoma Christian is rich with people who are willing to serve with a really loving heart and
right.
Wanting to help you
uh-huh.
to extent of their abilities.
Yeah.
And one of my professors, his name is Jody Jones, was really key in me choosing my finance minor. He was like, you know, try it. You know, you might not like it, but try it. You know, if you think you're interested in business,
yeah.
you know, this might be a good way for you to find out.
Which is what a good college advisor does.
Yeah,
say,
right?
Okay, try this out. Yeah.
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
So I took a minor in finance, and, you know, I went to class, and I was like, oh, my God, these are the things that I'm curious about. I want to learn these things. And so I ended up taking finance as a second major.
Yeah.
Rather than just being a minor.
Okay.
And so that's the story of my degrees.
Wow. But you went ahead with math. You must like mathematics. Really
yes,
well.
I like math, and you know, it's fun, and I've been taking math classes.
Not everyone would agree with you that math is fun.
Well,
no.
It's yeah. not always fun. I have you know, as a disclaimer,
it does
it's
involve
not
hard
fun.
Work. Does
yes,
it,
yeah. it does, but to some extent, it's fun and it's challenging.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, I kept the math degree and I kept the finance degree. So yeah.
So what has been the hardest thing
mm-hmm.
about being an African
mm-hmm.
in Oklahoma?
Well, that's very interesting. Let me think. See, I think Oklahoma has been a really good home because it's a loving place. People are really caring, and you know mm-hmm. they have a healthy curiosity. You know, they mm-hmm. want to know, you know, where you're from, about your
yes.
story.
Yes.
And I wouldn't say that it has been really hard. I struggled a little bit when I got here because, you know, I thought I could speak English, but nobody could hear me. So, you know, I would think in French and then translate in English. And sometimes
oh.
my sentences didn't make sense.
Oh.
So
when you came out of Rwanda to Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
you were strongest in French.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably write and read English better than you could speak it.
Yes,
yeah.
definitely.
Yeah. So English was really taught to you like an academic language, mm-hmm. and French as a working language, right?
I mean, I grew up in a French-speaking family.
Oh, okay.
So French was a lot, like, you know, it was like my first language along with Kenya, Rwanda.
Okay.
So in English.
That's the name of your native language your family speaks at home? Kiyawanda?
Kenya, Rwanda.
Kenya, Rwanda?
Yeah, that's close.
close enough. Say it again so that the listeners.
Kenya, Rwanda.
Okay, we heard it right. I'm not going to say it again. All right. Okay. So, but you grew up speaking French, so that just flowed for you. English was more of an academic language, mm-hmm, that you learned, mm-hmm. reading and writing.
Yes.
Was it just because you didn't know that many people who spoke English since French was spoken at home with?
Yeah, I didn't know very many people who used English at home.
Yeah.
So I only spoke it at school when I was taking English lessons.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And that's really a lot of our experience here with French and Spanish and whatever else like that,
mm-hmm.
that we learn it in the classroom, but if we don't rehearse it daily, then it's hard to converse like mm-hmm, that and all mm-hmm. that. But so you've learned English this well. Your English is better than mine.
Wow. Oh, stop.
Yes, it is. You've learned this conversational English in the 4 years that you've been in college then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's doing very well. English is a hard language, isn't it? It just has all kinds of things mixed in there. French is a much better organized language, isn't it?
Well, I'll say that for a person who speaks French, it's a little bit easier to speak English because it's both of them are rooted in Latin.
Yeah.
So if you speak French, it might be an easy, you know, transition to go to English.
Yeah.
So
some parts of English are Latin. Some parts are German.
Mm-hmm.
Some English has this kind of mashup of all sorts of different things. So now that you've graduated,
mm-hmm.
from college, what do you want to do next now?
You mentioned that I was interested in import-export.
Right.
And that's true. So I've always been interested in business.
Yes.
And in the amazing ways that businesses can change lives,
uh-huh.
of, you know, not only like one person, but families,
right.
and communities and,
right.
countries, mm-hmm. for that matter. I was in Rwanda a couple summers ago, and, you know, I was looking at all these things, you know, going on. I was like, oh, you know, I need to be part of this growth. And so one of my friends, who's going to be my business partner,
right.
was in Rwanda as well, and she was amazed by, you know, all the artistry that she could see in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she saw a couple things that she thought, you know, would be a great product here,
yes.
in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
And so together, you know, thought of this idea of, you know, what if we could bring a little bit of Rwanda to Oklahoma?
Yes.
You know, what if we could, rather than just telling people about Rwanda, what if we could show them?
Right.
So we are organizing our thoughts and, you know, putting, you know, things together and getting contacts so we can import some of the things, like, you know, like the artistry, like, you know, the jewelry.
Right.
There are some beautiful handmade jewelry.
Yes.
In Rwanda,
yes.
that we think would look gorgeous on Oklahoman women. that way we would not only, you know, help,
right.
Oklahoma women know,
okay.
more about Rwanda, but they would look beautiful and, you know, get compliments, you know, feel empowered.
Yeah.
So some of the jewelry is just amazing.
Okay.
And we thought we would do that, and that way we're, you know, the people who are doing the work back home,
mm-hmm.
you know, would have a much wider market, which is what I was hoping for, to give them,
yes.
to give them access to a bigger market.
Right. Now people might say, well, okay, is Ornella a citizen in the United States?
I'm not. I'm a Rwandan citizen.
But you're here on a school visa, work visa, something like that?
Now that I just graduated, my school visa has expired, but I'm going to be working, and
uh-huh.
will therefore be working on, will be staying here, uh-huh. on a working permit.
Right.
But I don't know
so
of anything that would keep me from doing business.
Yeah, so you're not here illegally.
No.
People worry, Fred,
yeah.
about that so much.
Yeah.
There are plenty of legal ways,
mm-hmm.
for someone to be in this country and,
mm-hmm.
not be a citizen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way because people are like, okay, wait a minute, is she a citizen or not? Ornella, thank you very much for this great conversation today. You are now our connection to Rwanda.
Oh, yes. To everybody who's listening, you guys come visit Rwanda. It's a beautiful place with beautiful people. And I have to warn you, most people who come to Rwanda fall in love and would never want to leave.
Uh-oh.
So come at your own risk.
All right. Well, Ornella, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And very much
luck
to you. And we want to thank Clarity Coffee today for allowing us to be here. That's the background noise you're hearing. Our listeners are used to hearing a lot of background noise because we always go to some location that's convenient to mm-hmm. the person who wants to meet. So, Ornella, thank you so much. And
you're welcome.
I wish you very much luck with everything you do.
You're welcome. And I wish you luck with pursuing your endeavors as well.
Thank you.
You know, I have the most utmost respect for the people who follow their dreams. And you're one of those people. So I'm really glad that we met. Good luck on your journey as well.
Thank you. I'm glad we met too.
That concludes our interview. There are several ways for you to catch this weekly podcast. Go to our website at intersectionsok.com, where you can subscribe, listen to episodes, read the backstory, and see photos of our guest. On iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and our Facebook page, we are Intersections Oklahoma. On Twitter and Instagram, we are Intersections OK. I always want to hear about the cool people in your life, so write to me. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is our awesome production advisor, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.